Welcome to Salty Moms Gone Sober. Whether you are a sober, curious, salty individual, can't seem to stay on the wagon, or have some successful sober time under your belt, our podcast creates a safe and comfortable space to let it all out. We can't guarantee anything but a good time and chill vibes. With a dash of humor, genuine language of the heart, and a salty truth throat punch here and there, connect with us on this unpredictable wave of sobriety. And when we find ourselves choking on a mouthful of saltiness, let's stop waiting to exhale and just spit some truth. Without further ado, your hosts, Alyssa Gruskin and Bree Juarez.
Hey guys, Alyssa here. Welcome to another episode of Salty Moms Gone Sober.
Hey guys, Bree here. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We are super excited for kind of a couple of things. We got a couple things going on tonight. Alyssa, can you tell me, please, about the first time that you
said yes?
You don't know? The first time's free, bitch. That's how they get you hooked. Come on, baby. I won't even charge you. It's free. It's free. First one's always free. You've never bought drugs.
No, I always had people buy them for me.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty. So anyway, do you want to introduce our guest?
I do. So tonight we have Gina Sacco. She is from here in Richmond, Virginia. And we're super excited to have her on our podcast to share her hope with us. So Gina, if you're ready, you can go ahead and take over.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. I'm Gina and I'm an alcoholic, very proud alcoholic. My sober date is June 20th of 2021. And I'm very, very happy to be sober and to be a part of the Recovering Out Loud and sober community. I think it's super important that we're doing this. So I just want to say thank you to you all for sharing this with those who need to hear people's stories. So what you guys are doing is it's service and I love that. But yeah, a little bit about my story is started in my childhood. I always say that my addiction or my alcoholism, the trait showed up as a kid. I was full of fear, full of anxiety since I can remember. I grew up in an alcoholic household. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic mother who has 6 years of sobriety. It was developed into, you know, eating disorders, perfectionism with grades, alcohol, drugs, and sex. Way too young, looking back, having sex, drinking, and doing drugs at 15 is just very young. Unhealthy coping mechanisms at a very young age, just lots of childhood trauma is basically what sums up, I think, why I just didn't know how to live in my own skin for pretty much my whole entire life. I truly hated myself. I had no self-esteem, but the best, I think, to a perfection, the false sense of self-confidence that was so believable and continued to get worse, filling whole that emptiness inside of me with whatever I could fill it with at the time that was going to only make me temporarily happy or feel better. A lot of people say escape from life, but really, I think I was drinking and doing all the things just to live life and to be a part of life. I realized apparently a lot of other people realized like I didn't drink like other people did. And it got worse with the pandemic because we were all doing nothing at home. I was lucky enough at the time, I thought I was lucky enough where I didn't have to drive to the store like a lot of people did back in the day. Like I could just get boxed wine and bottles of wine delivered to my house in 15 minutes. Like how great is that? I don't even have to leave my house. Like this is awesome. I would get off the bus. I really remember like elementary school, those were like the memories that I have that really stick in my head, like getting off the bus, not knowing, you know, what I was going to walk into. Like, was mom going to tell me to go to bed when it's 6 o'clock at night? It was just weird. And I never knew why my mom was like that. Why was my mom crazy? I just thought she was nuts. Like I thought something was wrong with her. Little did I know that alcohol did that to you. I had no idea. My childhood was filled with lots of fear, chaos, anxiety, and trauma. I dealt with it in certain ways, and that was acting out as a child, getting whatever attention, good or bad. It didn't matter. Then as an adolescent, the alcoholism, the traits, I guess, started with food. I overate as a kid, and then I was severely sick and bulimic starting towards the end of 7th grade, hospitalized, all the things, you know. In high school, that's when it really, you know, I was doing things that were considered experimental. experimental, where it was like the rite of passage. Grew up in Charlottesville. So you go to UVA football games, you go to Foxfield, you get wasted. You never see a horse at Foxfield. You know, it was what we did. And I was just partying and drinking and having sex and just doing these things that 15-year-old girls shouldn't be doing. It basically came down to the point where my mom couldn't mom me at the time because of what she was dealing with. And she was using her coping mechanisms and I was using mine. And we are identical. My mom and I were both alcoholic. My parents gave their custodial right upstate of Virginia. And that's how I ended up in Richmond, graduating high school in Richmond. I was in a group home. Of course, at the time, it was the end of the world for me because I was literally handed everything. I was very spoiled and privileged. I got away with whatever I could get away with because having an alcoholic mom, she doesn't remember anything the next morning, or she doesn't, there was no commitment, whether it was grounding or like being on the soccer team. Like I could quit anything. Consequences, but they were very just like, they were just words. But as an adult today, I was actually having a conversation with someone today about this. I'm so grateful for that experience. Being in the group home, I learned structure and life skills that I never would have probably had in the situation that I was in as a kid. And my parents, my family, they're amazing. And my childhood wasn't awful. It was just like, it was very traumatic. Being in the group home, I worked and didn't have my car. I couldn't drink. I was actually living a life of like a normal teenager for the last couple years of high school. Dropped out of college because I couldn't have my car, and smoke alarms wouldn't let me smoke pot because they would go off if you popped popcorn. So I was like, I can't. I'm like, this is like a step back from life. What kid says that on a full ride to a private college says like, this is step back in life. I'm too good for this. Like, I can't do my drugs here. I gotta go home. Can't have my car here. Sorry. So, I mean, it really just escalated, and it was drinking and doing out of control things, blacking out literally all the time, wrecking cars, driving, getting pulled over, blacked out. Horrible relationships with men, toxic relationships, no relationships with females. I was unhappy. I hated myself, never comfortable in my own skin. But if you look back on my Instagram, because I don't have those pictures or those memories deleted, I kept them on there. It doesn't look like someone that hates themselves. I had such a strong false sense of self-confidence that I believed it, and it was just, it was fake. I don't know what happened. Like, nothing caused me to get sober. I wouldn't say I had a bottom. Like, I had multiple experiences that I call pebbles, and they just added up over time. And I remember sitting on my living room floor, it was during COVID, thinking like, life, like, why is my life so bleak? And it was really fucking bleak. All of my friends, you know, everyone's getting married, and like, they have all the things that we're supposed to have, you know, do in life. I'm like, why is this happening to me? It was always, why me? Very selfish, self-centered. And that day when I was sitting on my floor, just something, it wasn't a voice, like it was just like a feeling. And it was like my first like spiritual experience, true, just said that I wasn't going to drink again. And it was weird. I remember being, I've never tried that before. So let's do it. Like weeks following up to that, I had downloaded an app with a counter, and you can look back and see all the times that like I restarted it. But something that day, like it wasn't me, it was something bigger than me, just told me I was never going to drink again. And I was like, all right, let's do this. I didn't question the decision I made, and I haven't to this day. I spent 51 days in my house by myself. I saw my family, sat in my feelings, slept a lot. After 51 days, I was like, okay, I think this is isolating to the extreme. I need to meet sober people. And that's when I went to AA for the first time, was so kindly taken out on a first date, and then to AA by a 13th stepper. I was only in it to meet sober people. It was like, this is my sober happy hour where I'm going to meet people, and that's it, meet sober people. But that actually changed. And I believe in, you know, I don't believe there's only one way to recover. In fact, my program of recovery, it's not just AA, it's multiple forms, factors that go into it. But AA definitely is a big part of my journey, and I love it. But yeah, that's kind of started and what life was like. It was awful and miserable, and I thought that was life. I was like, this is it. And I didn't want to live. I definitely can say honestly, like, if life was just going to continue to be like that, what's the point? I didn't sign up for this. And had this, something came over me, and didn't know there was this like social, like media following of sober people. And I made my first like sober connection with someone on Instagram. And it's just kind of like, it hasn't been rainbows and butterflies, I can tell you that, but it's been amazing since then. And I would not change or trade my sober life and recovery for anything in the world. Magical.
Thank you so much, Gina, for sharing that little nugget of your journey. So, wow, I just have to say, I appreciate you bringing up some topics that you went through in your adolescence, in your younger years, in your adolescence, that we haven't really talked about on Salty Moms Gone Sober. I'll get to that here soon. First, I do want to ask you, at what age, looking back, can you recall? I know it's kind of difficult, but when you knew, like, I hate myself. I don't like myself. I'm afraid of everything. And I am full of anxiety. I can't stand the skin that I'm in. A lot of young people don't feel that. And we felt that. How were you when that happened?
It's funny you say like that, because I always, the things that I was feeling at such a young age and what I dealt with first a little bit. And my parents got divorced when I was 2. So I have no memory of my parents being together. So it was a very dysfunctional family, loving it, but dysfunctional. So, I mean, it really started as young as I can remember. I don't really have, you know how people are like, they can tell you what their first memory was. And it was like, oh, when I was like 3, and mine wasn't when I was 3. Like, I don't really remember anything except for like early elementary school. And that was fear. I can laugh at these stories today, but they truly are fucked up. So I think it was like 3rd grade, I was molested by my neighbor. Didn't tell anybody except for one of my neighborhood girlfriends. Also in 3rd grade, we sent, I guess, a satellite into space. Something happened. Part of it like broke off and was going to fall onto Earth. Like, this thing's going to fall on my fucking roof when I'm asleep. It's going to kill us. Like, we're going to die. Things like that. Just things that kids should not be thinking about. And my dad tucked me in that night. After it was on the news, and he was like, oh, you forgot to wear your bike helmet to bed, like stuff like that. Granted, I mean, he was being funny, but it's not funny. I can remember getting off the bus one day, and there was like this big red van and parked in my mom and stepdad's driveway that said pest control on it. And my young mind, I'm like, oh my, I knew what a pest was. And I'm like, am I the pest? Are they getting rid of me? Literally didn't want to walk in the house. That is a true story, and I'll never forget it. Yeah, it's crazy. I can remember going back and forth between my mom and my dad's house because they were divorced. My sister and I had these like matching Beauty and the Beast suitcases. Like, let's wrap this fucked up situation in a pretty bow. And so it was really just that, and being in and out of therapy as a kid, being put on medication as a kid for just being a kid. They don't know how to handle situations like that. They don't have the coping skills to handle situations like that, nor should they. That is pretty much what I think was that set the standard for the rest of my life until I got sober. You know, I had very unhealthy coping mechanisms as a kid.
Yeah. And those are some of the things that I think are actually really important to touch on, and something that I can relate to personally, that definitely is the eating disorder. Heavy, heavy, hospitalized, you know, medical treatment. And my family didn't do anything. They were in denial. And that was another way of control, just trying to control things. Eating disorders are very different than substance abuse disorder. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very, very different. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you do see a co
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
funny. I've mentioned this when sharing my story that it started with an eating disorder, and a lot of my girlfriends who I've met through Instagram, who I'm really close with, they have told me like, "Wow, I never thought about it. I had an eating disorder." They never made that like correlation. So, I mean, I think that's what wanting to control my God, everything was so chaotic around me and as a kid and throughout my whole life, basically, it was chaos, drama. That's all I knew. And my eating disorder was really bad. I mean, I cringe. I mean, I was sick. Like, it's sick. It's not like I was doing it for fun. I was truly sick. And I was like down to 80 pounds, I think, in 8th grade. I gained weight because I was bulimic, but I was still like very obsessive about it. In early high school, when I was made a ward of the state and taken away or given away, I don't know what sounds better, sort of went away. So it was my environment that I was in. Obviously, I have body dysmorphia. I eat healthy.
And you know that that's something also to look out for, because a lot, we're human, all of us step away from our program sometimes and start doing and show it, like our triggers just start coming back, things that we could identify at first and be like, all right, I know how to handle this. I've got my superpowers to turn this around because I know how to turn shit around now. Although the pain and the obsession that comes with an eating disorder that is really, really difficult to explain to other people. I'm like, you think addiction is hard to explain? Try explaining an eating disorder. It's really fucking difficult.
Killing myself.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
I was dying. I get why my mom couldn't mom me at the time because she was dealing with her issues. Her drinking was her coping mechanism, and I was killing myself. So I'm grateful for what happened. I think I don't know if I would be dead. Obviously, I know I wouldn't be where I am today if that didn't occur, but it's a part of my story. I'm grateful that it happened. I learned structure. I had to have a job. I was privileged, very spoiled growing up.
What was the
And
tipping point? What was the tip of the iceberg that
what
led
made it
up
happen?
to your mom and apparently your stepdad, I'm guessing,
Yeah, yep.
that gave you up? I mean, your parents, you have, how old are you at this time? Are you 15,
I'm 15th
16?
grade, so however old you are
Okay,
then.
so
Oh,
16, 17, maybe. I mean,
yeah.
honestly, they only had a couple more years.
To this day, feels guilty, and she says we've made our amends to each other, and it was beautiful. And she still feels like so bad about it. I love my mom; she's my best friend. A lot of people question. My friends are like, "How do you even talk to your parents? Why?" And I'm like, "Because they were doing the best that they could do at the time. Abuse was also a thing. When my mom got drunk, she hit me. Like things were thrown at me. She was driving." Remember it like it was like today. I got asked not to come back. I wasn't expelled. I was just asked not to come back to the first high school that I went to. So she was driving me to the other high school that was like across town, and we're in the neighborhood. And I don't know why I was mad or what was going on, but I told her I was going to get out of the car. So she backhanded me, and of course I had like full face of makeup on because I'm a hooker in high school. I was like, I'm going to tell somebody. This is how I remember it. She might have a completely different story, but this is how I remember it. I threatened that I was going to tell someone. I never did. And the next thing I know, my parents, they're like, you can spend the night at Sydney's house. Sydney was my best friend. And I was like, that's so weird. Like they never let me spend the night out on a school night. Like, cool. And I found out from my best friend's mom that night she was like, tomorrow your parents are taking you to court. Probably going to get taken away. Like, what?
I mean, that's pretty confusing,
It
even for
was.
a 17-year-old.
And so I had a guardian ad litem or whatever they're called. I was at this place. It's called like Kids in Focus or something hokey like that. And basically like a halfway house for kids. That's what I think what it was. That was for 3 months. And they told me like after the 3 months that I could come home. And then I never went back home. It just didn't happen. That was just, I think, a lie to like make feel better, which it was a pattern in my household. Lots of lies, different lies to everybody to keep the peace. But then I went to the group home here. It's in Richmond. It's amazing. I love it. I still talk to people that worked there. It's called Virginia Home for Boys and Girls. And that's where I could live a normal teenage life. And it honestly, that was the first sense of like, honestly, like safety and security that I ever felt in my life. Unfortunately, it was only temporary because I got accepted into college and went to college and drank. I was drinking to have fun and to fit in and because other people were doing it. It wasn't until like an abortion and a breakup, I realized what drugs and alcohol could do for me. I'm like, okay, you guys are over here playing drinking games. Like, drinking's not a game for me. This is serious. I'm doing this to like get either, like I literally said, like I either don't drink or I black out. There was no middle ground. I'm either not drinking or I'm blacking out.
Yeah. And you had also said that goes directly with what you said, that you never drink to escape from life. It was a way for you to live life. So that makes perfect sense. Drinking to blackout, I mean, that is an alcoholic. I mean, that's, we drink
oh
it
my
to
God.
Live again. I mean,
yep.
You could drink once a month, but if it's to blackout, then there's a reason for that. Then when it becomes a daily thing, that's how we live our life.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I literally, it is. And I say this all the time. I just wrote it in my journal one day, but drinking became more routine as I'm a to-do list person because I like to control things and I like to check off boxes and cross things out. Drinking was on my to-do list. I mean, it really was, it was just a part of my routine. That's what we do. We get drunk. Gina gets drunk. She might crash her car and or get pulled over and get away with it. And she's probably going to sleep with someone. I mean, that was it. Drank, like, who knew what was going to happen? I, you know, I'm not all about talking about like the horror, the war stories, because I could go on for days and we could do this podcast for hours. You know, I'm just grateful that I'm alive and I didn't hurt anybody and I'm lucky. And I say lucky and I'm not proud of it. I never got in trouble. I drank and I drove all the time. I think that was, well, I'll quote my mom. She's like, that was just God nudging you into the program. And yeah, another part about escaping it, I just triggered like a memory. Do you guys remember that cartoon Pepper Ann?
Yes.
Okay. I remember watching that show one day. It had to have been in like late middle school. And I wished that I was a cartoon. In my head, I was like, I wish I was a cartoon because once the episode's over, they don't have to be on. Having that thought as a kid is just not okay. You know, I don't like to blame my childhood. I don't blame my parents for my behaviors and my addiction and or alcoholism, whatever you want to call it. I have a disease, and that disease it's way more than drinking. It's the obsession of the mind. Like, it's a thinking disorder for me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a full-on mental, physical hatred for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And fear, that's where it starts. And that's huge because not everybody feels that way about themselves. Mm-hmm. People have good days and bad days, you know, and we do in sobriety too. Like, everybody mm-hmm. has good days and bad days, but they're not defined by the hatred and self-loathing that a lot of people in addiction can relate to. That just dark place that I'm not good enough, I don't deserve, so if I do get, something's going to happen, or I'm going to fuck it up, because mm-hmm. I don't deserve, I'm not worth anyone's time, and if I did convince somebody that I am, fuck, that means I've got standards to live up to. No way am I going to be able to do that. So let me just sabotage this
I was
as
just gonna
soon
say,
as I possibly can.
I literally was just going to say cue the self-sabotaging because I was the queen of self-sabotaging. Yeah. And I still, like, I'm not, no one's perfect like that. Thank God. I still gin if I do that sometimes, but I realize like I don't, but it's very easy for me. I'm grateful that I can recognize that I am very self-aware because I practice it. I really practice this every single day. And it's just knowing what I was like then versus how I deal with things now. Like I've got, you mentioned there are good and bad days in sobriety. And there are things that I've gone through during sobriety that like, I don't know how got through them. I'm like, oh, holy shit. If I had been drinking, like I probably would have killed someone. I'm not trying to like scare people, but like sobriety is amazing. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but life, I say this all the time, life gets lifey. And it's out of our control. I've gone through breakup during sobriety. And I've gone through job losses. Something that was really weird is I always was very successful when I was drinking. I had a good career. I was miserable. You know, I made good money. And as soon as I got sober, I was like, I left my job, focused on, you know, my sobriety. My parents were like, just, we're proud of you. Just focus on that. And then it's like, I'm like, okay, now what? Like I'm working, but like I'm not making the money I was making, which obviously it's not important, but I was like, shit, like I actually questioned. I was like, was drinking like that making me more successful, or was it just like another addiction? I mean, I've gone through all of these things during sobriety, and I'm almost 2 years, I'm going on 2 years, but everything was always okay. And it sounds very cliche. My mom says it to me all the time, like, everything's going to be okay. And when you're in the thick of it, when you're going through the things, you don't want to hear it. It's the last thing you want to hear. But everything was always okay. And I now trust that statement that everything will always be okay, because I've survived so much in my life, you know, in active addiction and drinking and in sobriety. And I've come out totally stronger than ever.
So something I want to touch on is, I like how you mentioned that you had kind of like your spiritual awakening. You had kind of like that window of opportunity, that desperation that you felt. And it wasn't necessarily like one rock bottom, two rock bottoms, three rock bottoms. You call them like pebbles. And pebbles can be like speed bumps. Or I mean, pebbles can be fucking life-altering. On a bicycle, you hit a pedal, you go over those fucking handlebars, your face is straight in the fucking dirt. You know what I mean? Like a pebble can fuck your shit up. It can fuck your windshield up. It can fuck everything up. And so like a pebble is a big fucking deal. It might not be that spiky rock bottom dark hole. It's a different version of that. It's just a different version.
Right. It was a lot of things that at the time, like, I mean, stupid things, like everything happened when I drank, and I never like put that two and two together. Towards the end of my like drinking career, if you want to call it that, I stole my keys to try to get me to stay at it, to basically trap me in his house, which was weird.
How so romantic. Like,
I know, like, oh my God, just hide my keys, I'll marry you. So we're like looking all over, we're coked up out of our minds. Like I'm not drunk because I'm coked up. And so I ended up getting an Uber home at like 3 a.m. I call a locksmith to like break into my car because my spare key is in my car, like a dummy. And then the guy like messages me on Instagram and he's like, I have your keys, I found them. Ta-da, like, cool. And I was just like, drop them up in the mailbox. So I called my mom about it, of course, because I literally, like, everything was like World War 80, like everything was like the biggest deal. It was the end of the world. Like the wind could blow the wrong way and it was the end of the world. And I would call all of my closest people and like, they had to suffer with me. And if they weren't suffering with me, like it would just be another like, fuck, whatever. I'd get pissed off at them. Like, if you're not participating in my pity party and agreeing with me, like, just don't even talk to me. But my mom, so I called my mom and the first thing she asked, were you drinking? And of course I say no, because I was coked up. I didn't tell her that. I did tell her later. And then shortly after that, I thought my car got stolen. A friend parked it because I can't parallel park, and I was drinking and driving. I parked in a no fire zone, and they so graciously reparked my car like a normal person, because they're a normal drinker. They, you know, didn't drink like me. And I reported it stolen, like, to the police. Like, that stuff just doesn't happen when you don't drink. The best way I can like describe being sober and cutting out all of that bullshit, I made life so hard. I was always pointing the finger at everybody. It was always someone else's fault. End of the day, I know that it was always my fault. Yes, other people participated in it and had their part in it, but I was always blaming everyone else when really it was me. I was always the problem. Alcohol fueled that psychotic I was problem. And life is just so easy today. Like, life was so hard when I was drinking and doing all that crap. It was hard and it sucked. And I really thought that's just what life was like. But life is so easy today. And that's all up to me. I have the choice to make things really difficult or to just on life's terms. It's really hard, but it's a lot easier than dealing with the bullshit that comes with trying to like manage and control and fix and end up blowing up everything. Right. Life is just so simple today, and humans definitely overcomplicate life. For sure.
When you came into the room, so going into kind of now your recovery and where you are now, when you came into the rooms, did you actively work the 12 step?
I did. At first, of course, like I said, I was going, I was like, okay, like there's a healthy, like I've crossed the healthy line of like isolating. Like I needed to do that isolation, like to really, I was sleeping a lot. I kind of missed that. So I went to AA. It was like a small meeting of, it was a young people's meeting, and I was the only female in the room. I was really nervous. I picked up my white chip and my 30-day chip because I was 51 days at the time. And then I do another meeting the next day. This woman like tapped me on the back and after the meeting, and she's like, do you recognize me? And I was like, no. And I was like, no, because I don't know anyone in Chesterfield. I would close my eyes and pick meetings, and that's how I ended up going to a lot of Chesterfield meetings. But she was like, oh, I was your preschool teacher in my hometown. And I was like, oh my God, okay, maybe there is a God, or like, I believe in like the universe. That was like my higher power. But I also now believe that they're one. So then I say I joined her and joined a home group, but still was like, I'm not working the steps, not going to do it. I don't need it. So I can remember sitting in that room, looking around at everybody being like, I would never hang out with any of these people. I got a sponsor and I started working the step pretty immediately, actually, after judging. I worked the 12 steps. I worked them daily also, not perfectly every day. That working the steps, that is where, for me, that is where healing began. Able to put pen to paper, and I have all of my stuff. I didn't burn it like some people do. Like being able to see why I was the way I was. That's what I wanted to know. Why the hell was I so fucked up? Like, why did I react? Why was I acting like I acted? And to see it clearly written out by me in a journal right there, a pattern. It was like, holy crap, it was life changing. And that to me, that's where it really changed for me, was working the steps. You know, I think there is a lot of stigma around recovery in general, but especially with AA. It's amazing. You know, you might go to a meeting and, you know, it might just been an off meeting or not the right meeting. And I always encourage people, like, don't just go to one, don't just go to five, go to 10 different meetings. And if you don't like it, cool. That is definitely what truly where I think sobriety and recovery for me, I think they're two separate things, because you can be sober and still act like an asshole. And like a drunk, have those same behaviors that you did when you were in active drinking or whatever you did. But today, for the most part, like, my life is peaceful. Gut feelings. I go with my gut feelings, and I can see things like that I just chose to ignore before. But before, come on in. Like, welcome to the fucking shit show. Welcome to the circus, to the fun house. Let's be fucked up together.
Leave your shoes at the door. Grab a beverage over here. And
I'm probably not wearing
lines
pants.
Of Coke over here. And you can
drop acid over here if you really want to.
It was a shit show for sure. Like, I don't think there's one way to recover. There's no, I always say also, there's no wrong way to eat a Reese's. That's like recovery. There's no wrong way to recover. There's no right way. Whatever works best for you, do that as long as it's working and it's healthy and you're truly growing every day, like growing and becoming a better version of yourself than you were the day before. Like that to me, to my core, is what recovery is. Like we said, you have good days and bad days, but my bad days today, like I can truly say that like I am okay with them. It's cool. I know things are going to work out. I don't have to feel like it's not the end of the world anymore. Like life is not about me. It's freeing. I definitely feel free. I was definitely a prisoner of my own thoughts in this like dangerous playground of a mind that can be in my head sometimes. That's what I call it. We don't like to play there.
So Gina, what are final words you would like to tell the listeners?
Final words. I mean, really what I think important is that addiction, whether it is an eating disorder or if it's porn, drugs, cocaine, sex, alcohol, it doesn't discriminate. This disease does not discriminate. The only difference between me, people don't believe that, you know, I was how I was when they first meet me, but there's no difference between me and the homeless man under the bridge except for time. So many people on social media, in the recovery community that you have access to, and you're not alone. I mean, I definitely know that like I'd be where I am today on my journey if I did this alone. Because I know when I try to do things my way, I fuck shit up. Things just get worse. It doesn't discriminate. You're not alone. And the opposite of addiction is connection. So just plug in and strap up, put on your seatbelt, and get ready to heal. It's the best ride of your life.
Thank you so much, Gina. And just so our listeners know, that takes time. It takes time to understand what kind of recovery works for you. So like Gina said, don't stop at 3 meetings. Don't stop at 5. Go to 10. Keep trying. Not it, then that's not it. But there's something about a structured program that like take the drink, take the drug away, get to the core of why your solution before wasn't working. And why was I looking for a solution? What was the issue? And so, but that takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And that's why it's so important to get plugged in, to get your people and to get your sponsor as soon as you get into the rooms. Because if you don't have somebody that's helping you navigate through the big book, through the 12 steps, it's just not going to hit the way it hits when you have somebody and multiple people that you can call and count on and talk to and get through this shit with.
Thank you so much, Gina, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. We really appreciate it. And before we go, I have quite the announcement to make. Can I get a toot toot? Can I get a beep beep? Alyssa's celebrating her sobriety anniversary. 3 years, bitch.
03, 3 years.
How does it feel?
Feels wonderful.
It feels like chocolate and diamonds and rainbows and stars. Thank you so much to all our listeners. If you liked what you heard, tune in next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of Salty Moms Gone Sober. Be there or be square. And in the meantime, stay salty, stay sober, stay sane. Peace.